Ben Nicholson Smith joins us, sportsnet.ca editor, co-host of At the Letters. Ben, what I will agree with on that from JD is that, it feels like this, of the two bad stretches that this team has had, comparing the early part of the season to this recent one, it feels like this one will be more crippling to the team at the end of the season, because after that first slump, they really could not afford a second one.
I think you said it right there. I mean, to start the season the way they did was really tough, but there was always the hope that they could keep the momentum going and just build and build the way they did in May. And the recent stretch that they've been on confirms that that's not going to happen, that they're not going to go wire to wire after that slow start and really make up for it and go uninhibited toward the end of the season. So at this point, it's pretty tough for this team based on the run that they've been on. I think that chances are they're going to have to look to the future just based on what we've seen in the last week or 10 days. And that's a pretty tough reality for a lot of Blue Jays fans to stare in the face.
Yeah, and even I remember talking to you earlier in the year and basically saying, hey, the Jays aren't completely out of it because it is so early, but they can't afford another slump. The margin for error is out the window. And that's why, looking at this, you just feel this is a little bit more of a death knell than it was before. Again, yeah, I don't think that you can completely write them off. I think Fangraphs has them at 12% of still making the playoffs, which is not nothing. People want the season to be over. They want everyone to declare it over. It would be saying, yeah, their chances of making the postseason are very slim. It is not over. But Shai Davidi, writing a piece today, I don't know if you've had a chance to catch it, but basically talked about what this team is going to be doing looking to the future. And we'll talk a little bit about some of those pieces. But I thought it was really interesting, and this is kind of the stance I've been all along, which is you have this aging core. You're not going to be able to get rid of – you're not getting rid of Russell Martin. You're not getting rid of Troy Tulowitzki. At this point, you're definitely not getting rid of Kendrys Morales. You still have a pretty good rotation that's in place. And in baseball, it's really just not about tanking. You can't compare it to, say, the Philadelphia 76ers and doing trust the process. The team does have enough pieces to remain competitive. And I wonder if it's actually – I do believe that – it's so risky to try to just dump everybody and go into this complete overhaul and say to your fan base, this is really going to stink for a few years, and risk isolating all the fans that you've cultivated over the last couple of seasons.
Yeah, I agree completely. And I think if you're the Blue Jays front office right now, you have a couple of questions you're facing. And the first question is, can we win in 2017? And I think based on the way this team is playing, based on their record, based on the caliber of players that they have, it's unlikely. And there is some chance, like you said, but it's unlikely that they're going to win in 2017. So that leads to another question. And that question is, can they win in 2018? And to me, the answer to that question is definitely they can win in 2018, because they have Josh Donaldson and Aaron Sanchez and Marcus Stroman and Roberto Osuna in a pretty good core of players. Now, of course, they're going to have to augment that group of players. They are by no means set when you look at next year. But I don't think this is the kind of team that you just throw out and say, you know what, we're not even close. We've got to start from scratch. That's the territory of the San Diego Padres. The Blue Jays are much more talented than that. And I would be stunned if they went for a complete overhaul this summer.
Just a little bit of breaking news to share with everybody. Free agent forward Patrick Patterson has agreed to a three-year, $16.4 million deal with the Oklahoma City Thunder. That's according to Adrian Wojnarowski. So no more Pat in Toronto. That's a pretty cheap deal. That's $5.4 million per season for him there. I don't know if there's any opt-outs or something that can end this thing a little bit earlier if he has a player option on this deal. But that's a really good deal for Oklahoma City. So peace out, Patrick Patterson. We'll talk a little bit about this later. Speaking of outgoing pieces, so we're sticking with the Jays. I do wonder, though, reading with Shai's piece, is that it's a lot of discussion about whether this team is going to be trying to alter things on the fly and whether they'll be tinkering with things, and it seems like it's talent for talent. But when I hear talent for talent, it seems hard to isolate that from thinking someone like Marcus Stroman, a piece from the rotation going out and trying to get a positional player coming back in. Is that your sense of it, or do you think that pretty much everything is open?
I think that realistically, this is just my opinion, I think the Jays will trade Joe Smith. I think you have to at this point. I think you listen on Liriano and Estrada and see where things go. If they turn things around, and that's obviously a big variable in this, then you've got some pretty big trade chips. To me, Mark Stroman stays. I think you need Stroman, and I think that as a guy who has three more years in this city potentially, I think you hold on to him because he's proven to be a very durable 200-inning type ground ball eating starter. And if you have a guy like that and he hits the open market, you look at Mike Leake, you look at Rick Porcello, these guys get $80 or $100 million. So Stroman is a real asset to this team. I think you hold on to him and try to win with him, even though he definitely could bring you back some talent in return. I think you're more focused on the guys who are on the brink of free agency.
Yeah, and, you know, Marco Estrada falls under that, and it doesn't help that he's got, an ERA over 9 since the start of June. You would hope that he maybe turns it around for a start or two going into the trade deadline here. But, you know, I think the one thing I'm thinking of, and I know Blue Jay fans, they see the Yankees and what they did last year and how quickly things turned around. Well, the Yankees building process, I feel, started a lot earlier in that, you know, they already had the Gary Sanchez's and the Aaron Judge players on the brink of the major leagues, whereas the Blue Jays, they don't have that. And I don't know if they have the pieces, Marco Estrada included, to really bring in big, high-end, minor league prospect type of talent. Is there anybody on the roster that would bring that haul other than Josh Donaldson?
Right. I mean, I think you could certainly look to guys who have a lot of control left. If you're willing to trade Sanchez or Stroman or Donaldson right. or Asuna, absolutely. I just don't think you trade those guys. And the Yankees last year were in a position where they had guys were on the end of contracts. So Carlos Beltran coming up on free agency and Aroldis Chapman coming up on free agency. And those guys just have more trade value than the Joe Smiths and Jose Bautistas of the world. I mean, you look at Beltran as a switch hitter and the kind of year he had last year, that's some real value. And you look at Aroldis Chapman compared to Joe Smith, there's a pretty significant gap there in terms of what you can expect. So to me, the Yankees did an amazing job last year. And if the Blue Jays can come close to replicating that and pulling off that rebuild on the fly, you look to a team like the Tigers and what they did a couple of years ago to extend their window. I think the same applies to Detroit, and they deserve credit. If the Jays can come close to that, then they'll have succeeded this summer. But I still think that it's unlikely to think that a guy like Joe Smith or Marco Estrada can command that type of elite return.
Yeah, Estrada is the most interesting one to me because he has, like, I would say he's been the Jays' ace the last couple of seasons. He's had some terrific performances in the playoffs. He's a very popular player in the city. I think he's very well loved here. He's unanimously referred to as an incredible guy in the locker room, a soft-spoken guy, one that's not very cocky. Yet the last month, June, is something he must be thrilled that he gets to turn the calendar and say it's July. Big start for him tomorrow. But I can't help but think that if you're looking to trade pieces, why would you let go of Estrada for cents on the dollar when, again, if we're all agreeing that the Jays aren't going to be punting on 2018, trying to get him to come back on a bit more of a friendly deal? And if not, if you're still trying to look at moving a piece, why wouldn't the guy you focus in on be Jay Happ? Why? Because it seems to me that his value would never be higher than it is right now. You still get another year of control. He's coming off of, 5 straight quality starts? Is that what it is today?
It's up there, yeah.
Yeah, 5 straight quality starts. He just had, other than Chris Coughlin, that strikeout today where he hummed it up to 95 on Aaron Judge to get out of that jam in the fifth inning is one of the moments of the Jays season so far, as sad as that might be. But I would think that he would have some significant value, and maybe Estrada, in a weird way, it would be better to try to keep him and re-sign him.
Yeah, and I think you listen on both. I don't think it's one or the other. I think if someone is willing to give a lot up for Jay Happ, you do it. At the same time, if you're trading Happ, you probably need to get a pitcher back in that deal because you're looking at Estrada and Liriano hitting free agency, and then at that point, your rotation starts to look pretty thin. But if you can get something really good for Happ, you do it. And I think the same goes for Estrada, even though for all the reasons that you just outlined, JD, I think that he is a really desirable player, someone who fits in this organization long term. But you look again at what the Yankees did with Chapman. They go out, they trade him, they get Gleyber Torres, and then when it comes to free agency, they go out and re-sign him, and knowing that he can't see the organization and that he's a fit. So to me, if you're in a position to get something really good for Estrada, you do that, and then when it comes time for the offseason, you talk to him, and you see if there's a fit in free agency, because we know that both sides really seem to get along.
Ben Nicholson-Smith, our guest here on Sportsnet tonight across the Sportsnet Radio Network. Dan Riccio, JD Bunkus with you until midnight. The problem I have here, Ben, is, you know, you never want a team to end up in the murky middle. It feels like, you know, and the Yankees, as we've mentioned, were a unique situation, but I think there's a danger in trying to play both sides of the coin here. Sometimes it feels like you either got to go one way or the other, and that is go for it. No, maybe not, but you look at how the Phillies tried to extend their window, and then it ended up being really bad, and it's still really bad. The Astros were bad forever because they tried to extend their window. You know, there's more, you know, situations where it goes really badly when you try to stay competitive and rebuild on the fly rather than the most recent one in the Yankees.
For sure. And I think that the Phillies, in a lot of ways, represent a worst-case scenario on both ends. I think they tried to extend the window of an aging team for too long, and they suffered as a result. And then, as they've tried to rebuild, it hasn't gone along the way that they would have hoped. So you end up with a club that's given up all of these assets, and they've basically punted on a couple of seasons. And yet, I don't think anyone's going to be predicting the Philadelphia Phillies to win the NL East in 2018. They're just not close. And so that's the risk that you run. And if you're the Blue Jays, you look a couple years in the horizon, and in 2019, is it crazy to think that Bo Bichette and Anthony Alford and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. could be contributors? I mean, to me, that seems possible. Not necessarily something you bank on, but a possibility that you have to consider. So then that leaves 2018. It's this year in the middle before a lot of these prospects reach the big leagues. And if I'm the one running the Blue Jays, I try to win, because if you are close to winning and you have a shot at a wild card or a shot at a division title, I think you have to take it. I think that it's a competitive league. If you have a lot of good players like Donaldson, Sanchez, Stroman, I think you're close enough that it warrants taking another shot.
Yeah, I agree. And I also, yeah, you have all those pieces. And again, not only that, you do have a fan base that for years and years and years was, I mean, they got basically no competitive baseball. Finishing second in the division ended up being a real accomplishment for this team, and now it's caught the nation by storm. You have people coast to coast. Look at what's happened in Seattle, for an example. Look at the way that Blue Jays fans travel. Look at the television numbers, the gate numbers. It's really tough to go to for Mark Shapiro to say to Rogers, hey, we're going to try to sell off all these pieces and go back into the bottom part of the league as a longer rebuild, and have faith that all this fan base is going to stick around and that things are going to be okay. I don't see that happening, especially when you are still going to be sinking in big time money to a bunch of the names that you just mentioned. How big do you think tomorrow is for Marco Estrada? We tend to try to put too much into baseball, to singular baseball games, because that's just the way it is, when really it is it's a game about samples. And for Estrada, though, the dude's coming off of a month where his ERA was over 9. He was, I mean, pretty dreadful. He fought it the entire month. I know that, like we mentioned, that non-waiver trade deadline is coming down the pipe. It would think that things need to start correcting for him a little bit. And tomorrow, a big spotlight game against the Yankees, it feels a little bit bigger than maybe we usually should put stock into one game.
Yeah, I think that if you look at what Estrada has left this year, he's probably got 15 starts before he hits free agency and tries to cash in on what has been a really productive couple of years in Toronto. And if you look at the Blue Jays, they have 5 starts before Estrada is going to be potentially a very marketable player at the deadline. And if his next 5 starts are like the last 5 starts, then they're not going to get very much of anything in return for him. And that would be a missed opportunity for the Blue Jays. But if his next 5 starts are like the first 5 starts he had in 2017, then they're going to be in a position to actually get something of real value for him at the deadline. And so there's a big swing there for Estrada, for the Blue Jays. I really think you're right that the stakes are pretty high and starting tomorrow.
When did the Blue Jays become such a bad offense, Ben? Like, it feels like, I know they had their struggles towards the end of last year and certainly at the beginning of this year, but it seemed to start to come around in May. And I thought once Josh and Tulo came back that the offense would come with it and continue and maybe keep them competitive. But like, this has just been, it's been awful. What do they have? 9 singles today and 4 walks?
Like, I think you got to look at Devin
Travis.
Get
an extra base hit.
The loss of Devin Travis, I think, can't be understated.
Hey, he's a good hitter among many, or at least we thought. I mean, it's true. When you look at this club entering play today, they were 27th in Major League Baseball in runs scored. And again, this is a league that includes the Padres. You're at least going to be 29th. I mean, it's not that hard. But of course it is hard. I mean, you're facing major league pitching every day. I think that the problem, or one of the problems with the Blue Jays, and this applies to the offense, to the defense, to the pitching, they're just not that deep. And when you have a club that runs into injury problems the way they have, then you end up in a lot of trouble if your second tier of players isn't as talented as it should be.
Doesn't that kind of go back to the offseason, though? Because you'd think that the Jays did seem to skimp a little bit in certain areas, and one of them does look like the bench.
Yeah. I mean, Steve Pierce was supposed to be that guy, but then
But again, you know he has injury problems and that he's not a very durable player, and then you're trying to supplement him with guys like Chris Coughlin. This just seems like such an inevitability. You have the oldest team in baseball, a roster that almost fielded nine guys over 30 years old the other day. I think I'm trying to remember who the only guy under 30 was when they was it maybe Goins they played the other day? Either way, it's an old team. You have to expect that there's going to be some injuries, and so you should supplement them with depth. And in the offseason, the team just didn't do that. It just seems crazy to me. But yeah, Devin Travis, that just still feels like the big hole for me. I was listening to Shai Davidi today talk about how he's just a hitter that the Jays can't replicate. He's someone that hits gap to gap,
yep,
and he's a different player in their lineup, someone that's just, you know, not completely reliant on the long ball to get his offense done, and it is a real big hole. And I still do think that that's going to be an interesting piece going forward in the offseason, what the Jays do in terms of bringing in that other guy that's going to be in the middle.
Yeah, and I think they have to bring in someone, because you look at Tulo, and he's actually been able to take the field for the most part. I know he missed a month in there, but he's been out there more often than not this year. But what happens if he needs 6 weeks, or what happens if Travis continues to run into these knee problems? I mean, it's when you look at the middle infield of this Blue Jays team, they need an answer there. And I don't know if Lourdes Gurriel Jr. is close enough that he's a legitimate big league option. He's certainly on the radar. I think Richard Urania is someone that they would have hoped would take a bigger step forward this year, but offensively, he's not holding his own at Double-A. So I think there are questions there, and it's tough. If you go outside the organization and try to sign a really good backup infielder, I mean, it's not an easy thing to do, really. There aren't that many of those guys floating around, and even a Jed Lowry ends up signing a three-year deal. So it's just hard to find these guys who can sub in, and yet it's a big need for this club.
Last one before I let you go. You just did mention a couple guys in the minor league system. Tonight we had the Bisons game on the station, and we're watching Rowdy Tellez play. And the guy is hitting sub 200 with a six. I think his OPS just dipped under 600 as well. Or sorry, what did I say? His 200 average OPS under 600. Yeah, his average at 600 would be pretty good. I'd be down with that. But have you, based on his season, I know it's his first year at AAA. He did move up pretty quickly. But do you view him a little bit differently than you did coming into the season? Because this has to be somewhat of a disappointment his year so far.
Yeah, it's definitely a disappointment. And I do view him differently. I think that he came into the season on a high after finishing the 2016 season in Double-A with such a productive year. And I think he had really earned a lot of leeway and a lot of trust from the Blue Jays in spring training, when he had a great spring training and he seemed to impress everyone, from John Gibbons to Mark Shapiro to Lewitsky. All these guys came away from spring training impressed with Rowdy Tellez. But so far, the results just haven't been there at AAA. I think that, thankfully for the Blue Jays, the need at first base has been lessened by the presence of Justin Smoke, and who would have seen that coming? But I think that Tellez right now has still a lot of work to do to prove that he's a legitimate big league option.
Yeah, thanks again for doing this, Benny. It does kind of stink that the one guy that you thought was a higher up, I don't know, prospect.
He was the only guy close to the major leagues. It felt like, at least, because, you know, there's so many other guys down there that the Blue Jays have not felt were ready to make that jump. There's that big gap in the minor league system, and it still remains a pretty big gap in the minor league system.
Still, they've had bigger wins. I think taking what Bo Bichette has done and comparing that to the disappointment of Rowdy Tellez, you take the Bichette. Bichette's done them like 10 times out of 10.
Hey, Ben.
For sure.
Really appreciate the time tonight, man. Always do. Thanks for this.
Thanks, buddy.
Thanks, Dan. Thanks, JD.